They can't send the sound of your voice. They have to change that sound. It must go with the speed of light for it to be instantaneous. So they convert sound into electricity. And they ship the electricity over the wire. But they don't ship your voice. They ship electrical impulses which are imitating your voice. And they go with the speed of light instead of the speed of sound, so that your hello here is hello there instantaneously. Electrical impulses at the other end are reconverted to sound. But in between the sound here and the sound there are electrical impulses. Billions of them to make the sound of your voice. Billions of them to ship a picture through the air as electrical impulses reassembled by your TV set into picture form. And so it is with the image of a tree. Out of the cosmic mind, billions and billions and billions and billions of electrical impulses, which we receive and reassemble into the picture called tree. That's what our brain is doing every minute. When you know this, you can be still and slow those images down. You can consciously say that I know that everything in this material world is not one image, but is composed of billions of images moving through my brain. And the reaction of my brain to atoms that I cannot see becomes the visible forms of this world. That is how I am trapped into seeing people die. That is how I am trapped into seeing people suffer. God made none of it. Neither did God make the fire or flood or the hurricane. But that is how I am trapped into experiencing these things. The images of the cosmos flow through and into my consciousness, and I accept them. There's a good way to remember how we may attain that level of consciousness which can look out at our fellow man without judgment, in spite of what appears to us. We see it enacted in the sky every day. Slowly, out of nowhere, that orange rim appears on the horizon. And then it rises to its zenith, overlooking its universe, smiling at everyone, smiling at red China, red Russia, smiling everywhere in spite of who is there or what the eye may see. It comes down south of Market Street and north of Market Street. It comes down on the slums as well as Nob Hill. The sun plays no favorites. It looks out benignly at all. And as Christ rises in us like the sun, it finds in us the capacity to do the same. You will recognize the rising Christ within as you are able to look out and withdraw judgment, not falling into the trap of a human consciousness which says the sun cannot go to your garden, only to his. And when you avoid that trap, you will discover the rising Christ will appear in and as your living consciousness. It cannot make its home in a human consciousness. And we are barricading ourselves from the very things we seek. We are holding off the Christ of our own being as we pass out our foolish judgments, which gain us nothing but a moment of self-superiority over that which has no reality whatsoever. We can even judge ourselves wrongly, let alone our neighbor. The moment you're capable of the various emotional jags that we all seem to go through about our anger for this one, our contempt for that one, our recriminations, our animosities, these two prevent the rising Christ. And all we gain is a momentary satisfaction of a personal nature, and we lose the reality of spirit, the single eye, truth in consciousness. And so we remember that rising sun, which is completely impersonal. And we learn to look out as the rising sun, as the risen Christ. And we do not personalize this world by making one bad and one good. We do not fall into that temptation. As you resolutely permit yourself no deviation into the false judgment of this world, you are walking the line of righteousness beyond the human. Beyond, you have heard it said of old. Now it's old that just as we have learned for a moment to stop the false images that flutter through our brain, that force us to accept the false appearances, we are told to multiply those instances. And the way we are told that is to lay not up treasures upon the earth where moth and rust corrupt, but rather lay up your treasures in heaven. And you see, every time you break the circuit of cosmic thought and attain that split second of silence, that which comes through is your daily bread. That which comes through is the invisible, infinite, the voice, the one, the self, the power, the divine mind. And it teaches you how to forgive. It teaches you how to love. It multiplies your lack into abundance. It removes the lump. It shows you itself. And so our laying up treasures in heaven is the constant awareness that there is no place where God is not. And every moment that I deny this, by seeing one who is not the divine image, I am laying up my treasures on the earth where moth and rust corrupt. And all I can receive for it is corruption. Corruption of the form, corruption of the life, corruption of the experience. Now let's do that again, because the way you break these images up and attain your silence may be the very need that you have sought in vain for attaining the real deep silence of my peace. Even in our desire to serve the Spirit, we have served mammon because we have not been able to attain this silence. And so look again and realize the speed of light traveling at 186,000 miles in one single second brings into you 186,000 miles of light in that second. And that isn't one image. That's more images than all of the computers in this world can ever calculate. And they are separated images. There is space between every image coming into you. And in that 1 second, you are inundated by individual interrupted images spaced with intervals between them, but to you they are one image because of their tremendous speed. That's why you see things as a continuum, although they are separated. Consciously know that and be still, and you will find the images of this world will respond to your knowledge. You can look at an apple or a drinking cup and do the same. You can look at a criminal. You can look at anything in this world and realize it is composed of multiple images, not one. And the great speed of those images gives you the impression of one image called a duck or a goose or a chicken or a fowl or a bird. But all that is there is multiple images. And these things die because they are images. And this world is made of those images. He hangeth the world on nothing but images. And that is why we are here, to overcome the images. As you overcome them, you overcome this world of images. And only then, as you overcome the world of images through the repeated silence, the repeated laying up treasures in heaven in spiritual consciousness, are you invited into the reality of being, to see him as he is, to inherit the earth. And then your spiritual fruitage falls in abundance, because in the absence of your subservience to the visual images of this world and to the images created by the other four senses, for sound is an image in the brain just as sight is. The sensations of touch are images in the brain just as sight is. Taste, smell, all these are images in the brain. And as we are taken out of the images, as we slow them down consciously, you find they lose their power to fool you into the belief that evil exists on this earth. They actually lose their power to convince you that you lack or are limited. They lose their power to convince you that you can suffer as the world has suffered. You learn that these were images of touch, of smell, of taste, of hearing, of sight. Sensations. Multiple sensations at alarming speed, ticking away at the brain until it is completely brainwashed, hypnotized by this world. To overcome those sensations, slowing them down, and then stepping out of them, takes you out of that human mind which is a slave to the world of sensation, out of the cosmic mind, which is shooting its false recreated universe through the air as invisible atoms, and breaks the whole circuit of the cosmic and human mind, which is the great deceiver about the reality of your being. That's why we're told to lay up treasures in heaven. The repeated silence keeps breaking the continuity of the lie. And as less human thought enters your consciousness, more divine thought takes its place. As a man thinketh, so is he. As more divine thought takes its place, more divine thought appears externally to your being. More divine thought appears out there as matter. More divine thought becomes manifest. You are converting the world of human thought into the world of divine thought. You're changing life streams. You are letting divine thought express where previously, through your ignorance of its presence, you barricaded yourself from it. And you're doing it with the silence which lays up treasures in heaven, which brings forth more divine thought and less human thought. You're actually changing your universe. This is the rising Christ. Now, ascension has been made to be a word of the future. It isn't. The rising Christ is ascending. And every meditation is part of your ascension. Every moment of truth from within is part of your ascension. The I that says unto you, lay up treasures in heaven, in spiritual consciousness. The I that wrote this Bible, the I that spoke these words where Jesus appeared, is always speaking them at the door of your human consciousness, waiting for it to be still, that it may lay up spiritual treasures within you. There is no place to go. What the church has not realized is that I say unto you is telling the world that only I in the midst of you is the voice of God. Only I that comes to you in the silence of your mind is the living Spirit of God. And it makes no difference what church it is, or what branch of science, or what branch of metaphysics. Only I in the midst of you is God. And that I has no name. It is not Protestant. It is not Jew. It is not Catholic. It is not Hindu. It is not Buddhist. It is I. It is not white, nor is it black. It is I. And as long as we make these human distinctions, we are saying raka to our fellow man. And we are under the judgment of our own judgment. We are separating ourselves from the life stream of the very spirit that we are seeking. That sun is shining on all religion, all colors, and our consciousness must do the same. We cannot continue then to serve two consciousnesses. You cannot live in a human consciousness and serve the spirit at the same time. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve two masters. In this divided mind, we divide ourselves. We split ourselves up into a separation. Now you must have the feel of this Sermon on the Mount by now. It is the revelation that there is no power except the power of God. The old consciousness, the old way, the way of old, said there were two powers. There was God up there and the devil down here. And the new consciousness says, no, not true. There is not God up there and the devil down here. The only devil there is the human consciousness, which does not know God aright. Because God isn't up there and not down here. God hasn't ceded earth to the devil. God is up there and God is down here and God is everywhere there is. And so it tells you, swear not at all. Swear not by heaven. Swear not by earth, nor swear by Jerusalem. Because God is omnipresent. Everywhere God is. There is no place where God is not. And that leaves no room for Mr. Devil. It doesn't even leave room for a human consciousness. And as long as you live in one, you're not living in God. We are being told that when we're not living in God, because we're living in a human consciousness, what we are calling life is nothing but the living death that masquerades as life. Mortality is its name. And it is a pure and total myth. You do not go to heaven when you die. You are in heaven when you know that I am the Spirit of God. And that knowing is not a yea or a nay, not a Lord, Lord. That knowing is the rejection of all that is unlike your spiritual self. Now, meditation should be easier as you consciously stop the multitudinous images that make up each individual form. You may even find that you're locked in, and that locking in is a great peace. And then the Father within, he doeth the works. I would have liked to discuss divine love today, and maybe there's a moment to do that. One of the reasons that we have found it so difficult to love our neighbor, to love the world around us, to come over the appearances, is because, partly because of translation. We have one word for love. The Greeks had three. You see, the original Aramaic was translated into Greek. There are no records of the original Aramaic. We only have the record of the Greek. And in Greek, there are three words for love. But when you translate it into English, you say love. There's the word eros, which is erotic love, and that becomes love. There's philo, which is human love, friendship love, and that becomes love. And then there's the great word, which also becomes love, but it isn't love as we know it. It's the word agape. And though I can't pronounce it, I'll just say it's agape or agape, one or the other. But it means recognition of spirit, spiritual love. And when we are told to love our neighbor, that's the word that was used. When it says, love one another as I have loved you, that's the word that was used. And just me humanly loving you humanly is not the word that was used. It was the recognition of the divinity of man, that love. And had there been a translator, even one, with a spiritual consciousness, rather than just take the word agape and translate it into love, just like the other two words, which also translate into love, he would have designated love the spiritual identity of your neighbor. and the world would have been moving in the right direction. And so Jesus, who knew that love which is the love of the Christ, the impersonal, all-inclusive love, which does not say, I love you less because you're this or you're that, but I love you because you are that living Christ of the Father behind that mortal mask. That love is what we must learn to develop. It's such a beautiful love that it will not even permit us to go out and for one second accept that one, that person, as anything less. We cannot see a suffering person. We cannot see a hateful person. We cannot see a criminal person. Each of these is the human righteousness. Because I see it, it is so, righteousness. The Pharisee righteousness. The righteousness that doesn't see the Christ but sees the adulteress. And so the law of the old Mosaic Testament was broken. Karmic law was broken by the Christ that walked the earth as Jesus. And as it told us to come through the visible appearances, it was teaching us how to break the karmic law which has imprisoned us in this world of opposites. If you've suffered from somebody's hate, if you'd suffered from somebody's anger, if you'd suffered from somebody's inconsiderations, you are under karmic law. And you break the karmic law as you perceive not the one who causes the suffering to you, but the Christ who is there. When these words come to us, we all think, oh, I'm going home tonight and do that. And then we find we cannot. It is the day in and the day out fidelity to doing that which ultimately breaks through the crust of human consciousness. And so, this is a dedication, you see. I say unto you, do this, do that, but I also say unto you, Christ isn't attained just because you read it in a book or because you went home to do it in one night. And yet you must persevere until you do break through the shell of human consciousness, until you can actually not by word of mouth say this, who is antagonistic to me is the Christ, but until you can actually within yourself know that only the Christ is present where he and you stand. If you try it just with that individual, you're going to fail. It includes the taxi driver. It includes the maid. It includes that fellow who stole your car last month. You see, it includes everyone with whom you come into contact, and before you even come into contact with them. You are walking through Christ. And then all of a sudden, I say unto you, is the very voice of your own being. Why, of course this is true. Of course I can say there is no fool. Of course I can turn the other cheek. Because there's nobody there but Christ. Nobody. And then because I have reached that level where I can and will willingly turn the other cheek, there's no demand upon you to do it. Because the Christ you have realized everywhere is never going to ask you to turn the other cheek. Only the human will. Now we have all the weapons. But if we let them lie idle, We'll continue reading more, studying more, planning and thinking more. These three chapters, 5, 6, and 7 of Matthew, are the weapons. And when the great authorities write the truth, they're writing about these three chapters. They are interpreting what is in these three chapters in volumes and volumes and volumes, all under different names and all under different religious names. But no one can give you I, and no one can take I away from you. I is your name. I had a call at 8 o'clock the other morning. A woman said she was shockproof and wanted to find God. We studied a while. And it's true, very little shocked her. In fact, nothing did. She was right up to that point. But in the middle of the morning at 4 a.m., she awakened and she couldn't find this world. She couldn't find this world. She looked everywhere. It wasn't here. There was nothing. She had been hit by the realization that this world is not. She hadn't yet reached the place where she could find my kingdom, but suddenly there was no world. And she was no longer shockproof. She was frightened. She waited to call till 8 a.m. and told me, in tears, that she couldn't find anything. There wasn't anything out there. Everything was gone. She couldn't find herself, and she thought she was going crazy. I told her to find some chapter in the books called Between Two Worlds. And I meditated for her and with her. And then I went to find that chapter to get it for her. And I found instead, my kingdom is not of this world, which was very close to what I was looking for. But in front of it was another chapter called Losing I-ness in I. And I read the first three paragraphs, and it was the identical experience that she was now going through. When I called her and told her to read that chapter, I told her to read the one after it as well. Losing I-ness in I, losing I-ness in I. My kingdom is not of this world. And then if she felt like it still, to go to these two are in the parenthesis, by the way. And then if she felt like it, to go to the book The Infinite Way and read New Horizon. She said, well, that takes care of my day. And she read those things. And you know, within 48 hours, or less I think it was, she was on her 2 feet again, and she was trying to find that great void which had frightened her. But not only trying to find it, now everything she was reading was coming up out of the page and hitting her square in the eye. She had touched the spirit without realizing it. It had opened her. And the pure, pallid, feeble words of the page were now vital. There wasn't anything that she didn't turn to read that didn't hit her with strength, a new meaning. That great void opened her, brought her to a place where the Spirit could speak. And then it did, you know. She'd never heard a voice to my knowledge, but it freed her from a great judgment that she had been making for more than a half a century. When it spoke to her, it said, you need not hate so-and-so anymore. And the removal of that hate by the voice took off of her shoulders something that for a half century and more had prevented her from finding her real freedom. All because she awoke one morning at 4 a.m. and this great void presented itself. Now, the reason I repeat it to you is this. I forgot to warn her that when it happens, not to be frightened. I really forgot that when it happens, you do get frightened. So if it does happen, even if you are frightened, remember, we all must pass through that great void. Suddenly there's no mentality. There's just a void. But it's the greatest, most wondrous void you'll ever find, because it breaks cosmic mind and opens you to the great and glorious wisdom of spirit. And from then on, the voice may come, the quick may come, anything may come. All part of your great liberation. This voice that spoke to this woman, freeing her from hate, was I, which say unto you, call no man raka, scoundrel, fool, thief, murderer, alcoholic, addict, anything. But get into that great void where the mind refuses to deny that only God is present. And then the Father which seeth in secret will reward thee openly. These are the many ways in which our righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. You could name another 100 ways. But the Spirit through Jesus gave us these ways. There are others. And I'm sure that in modern dress, in the 20th and 21st century, the examples might have been different. We wouldn't have had to run 2 miles when someone said one, or give them our cloak when they asked for our coat. But the meanings would have been identical. Don't take them only on their literal basis, or you lose them. Learn to accept them for the meaning, which is lifting you above the human reason, logic, thinking mind. Open yourself, surrender yourself, be meek unto your soul. And when you are mindless, void, the infinite will establish its presence in your consciousness and fill that void. Don't be afraid when it happens. You might also take a peek at those chapters that I mentioned to this woman. It's in the third part, I believe, of the parenthesis, in eternity. Losing I-ness in I. My kingdom is not of this world. And then in the infinite way, new horizon. All of which have something to do with today's message. I say unto you, you have heard it said of old. And he said, heard it said, because the scribes used to read these laws out loud. In an open assembly, the scribe would read and say, an eye for an eye, or a tooth for a tooth, or thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder thy father and thy mother. And this is what they heard. Ye have heard it said of old, but I say unto you, resist not evil. For the moment you resist evil, you have found a place where God is absent, and there is no such place. In your fidelity to this omnipresence of God is your only true safety. Now, there's a lot more to be said, but there are many more chapters on the sermon, about 8. It's going to be hard work. It's going to be the kind of work that's kind of picking boll weevils off the cotton. But it has to be done. We all have to do this in our own consciousness. It isn't the kind of great, inspiring, flowing lines that we can all say, oh, how uplifting. That follows from this getting on our hands and knees. This is the kind of work that's involved in the sermon. Getting inside yourself with a detergent, scouring all of the judgments out of your being, one by one, until the pure at heart self is a perfect transparency for I. Then I will go before you. I will be the way. I will be the light. I will be the wine. I will be the water. I, the resurrection, which is the reunion of your present and your pre-existent self into one perfect infinite selfhood. If you're a purist, you'll know I even said it wrong. You would correct me to say it is the dissolution of my imperfect present self so that my perfect ever-present self can reveal itself. Now let's stop those images in our final meditation. The images of people we don't like. The images of conditions we rather weren't there. If they are there, God is not. And so stop the belief that they are there. Deny thyself that you may bear witness to the Father. Only Christ is waiting at home for you. Only Christ will ever be there. Only Christ walks the streets of every city. Only Christ is in the sky. Only Christ walks this earth. And only the Christ of you can know that. Be willing to come above your mind into the great void of that mind, where no images in this world can lie about the presence of God. That is the beginning of resurrection. Thanks to all of you for being here. Look forward to our next meeting.